that's an absolutely fabulous thing. Thank you very much for coming on a rainy day that you're not practicing cycling for Sunday, but actually you come into the space to help us at the African Gender Institute give birth to a baby. And some babies, you don't go like this, and some babies you just got to pick them up and go, mwah! This is Feminist Africa, issue 70, and we are going to talk a little bit to you about that, about the process, and many of the authors who put articles into this volume are here, and they'll also be able to say some things about why they wrote, what they wrote. They come from many different contexts in SADC and different universities. But I think the biggest thing that I want to start off with that explains my sense of appreciation for your presence. I know that there are people who've come from NGOs here, there are people who've come from quite a wide range of spaces, but I also know that there are a lot of people here because they have a relationship to what it means to be a student, to being a young woman or a young man, but a young woman on a university campus. And that's a group of people who really shouldn't even be called a group. So much diversity, so many different stories, so many different ways of being and seeing and doing and creating and dreaming and speaking. And for a tiny number of years, sometimes three, sometimes a few and longer, sometimes a bit shorter, those of us who work in university spaces in all sorts of ways have the honor to work with you as our, I'm sure you would hate to be described in this way, but I'm going to do it, as our younger political sisters. And there is no greater honor than for us to work with you as you teach us what the meaning of a future should and could be. That the term student is just something that gets stamped onto a registration card as you become part of the machine. You're not a student. I mean, yeah, you'd better be if you want to get into the library. But you are someone who is growing, thinking, full of experience, full of wisdom about the day-to-day realities that you're facing in whatever country you come from whatever context you're bringing. And universities are very weird spaces. They're very weird spaces. But they are spaces in which those of us who are a little bit older, or shall I say, who were born in the 18th century, have the privilege of viscerally important recognition about what it means to live, to be human, to work, to think, and to share ideas, often in very narrow ways. Syllabi are very narrow things. But the joy of a project like the one that led to what's in this edition of Feminist Africa is that it wasn't produced through a relationship to a course, through a relationship to a degree. It was produced through a relationship to the recognition from a number of people in a number of different universities, many ages, many ideas, many backgrounds, that we needed to own the university spaces as political spaces in which education may be happening in classrooms, but much more importantly, happens in our lives with one another and with the ways in which we could come in and out of the institution and the ways in which we need each other to recognize the importance of our lives and our wisdom beyond a classroom setting is what drove us to create a project. And Feminist Africa isn't the project I'm speaking about. Many of you might know this journal. It's been around for a while. It's online. We would love you to contribute to it. We would love you to read it. We would love you to throw darts at it and tell us why. We would love you to have it in, where is your reading literature? In the bathroom? For you to help us make it a better product, one that does in fact speak to things you might care about. This particular issue, as I've been saying, came out of the work of a two-year project that looked at the meaning of sexuality and reproduction and thinking about feminist and women's leadership in those spaces. What would that mean? And I'm going to ask four of the authors who are here today. The material didn't only come from the project, it came from some others as well. But four of the authors who have contributed are, we are currently sitting developing a whole new project. And they're going to tell you a little bit about their involvement with the material that you might want to read about. They'll each take a little bit, about 5 minutes or so. And then if you have questions, if you want to talk about some of what they share with you, we're very happy to turn this into a conversation and a dialogue, but we're also very happy to sit and lunch and smile and say, Happy International Women's Day. So I'm going to start by inviting Setuenya Masine from the University of Botswana.
Hey, thank you very much for turning out in such large numbers for our faith that we hold like this. Very beautiful baby, green and red. And what's most amazing about this baby is that for us here present who are the authors, it was a journey of sort of a return to our younger selves. The product of this work and the chapter that I wrote with two other colleagues is on page 48, Making Sexuality and Sexual Body Politics at the University of Botswana. And it allowed us, first of all, as the researchers, to reconnect with our younger selves. So the concept of intergenerational dialogue is something that we both come to appreciate as fulfilling but very, very challenging. The landscape within which we were students and young women growing up at the Eusebio Uni campus, as we went back with the girls that we worked with through poetry, through pyjama parties, through their eye stories, through their a whole lot of things, just girls being girls. It's been a 3-year project. It's been ongoing for 4 years, is it?
Two and a half, almost three years.
And we've had about a fluid changing demography of girls since we started. You know, people are at universities for like 3-4 years. So some of the girls, women, young women, have left university. And one of the things we're sort of working around is how to keep connected after university. But the project is specifically targeting young women on campuses in Southern Africa between the ages of 18 and 25. But then that do become women, and hopefully women who can be considered leaders. And not leaders as in just some office with a title, but leaders in their personal, especially personal spaces, personal relationships, where the personal becomes political. So we're using feminist action research, which is it's a tool that is not, its power is that it's not cast in stone. There's activism there involved. There is wanting to intervene and make a difference, do some actual thing that you hope that will tend with some result. But nobody decides in advance what your empowered self ought to be. It is the process that shapes in a sort of 2 steps back, 3 steps forward, moments of, I don't think I want to be in this space. So you know what, I actually do miss being with the other girls. I miss the the nights out, and I'm just talking about myself, and then on what issues? Okay, maybe I personally would rather not talk about my community, but I prefer to talk about my baggage from home. So, you know, girls came with various boundaries, parameters, experiences. So, yeah, we've had such a great time, and just really great, you know, challenging times. And we're moving on to the next phase, which we're here to discuss, to say, okay, so now we know, for instance, at the UV campus that when young women came to apply for their various degrees, initially they just thought, okay, process of, simple process of going to class, getting the grade, having a degree. Little did they realize that they're entering as, you know, teens, and are going to live as young women. And so the most life-changing experiences are going to happen within those 4 years, and only some of it will be in the classroom. The most of it will be outside the classroom. And then how do you navigate this space called university as a woman, as a young woman, who's also discovering quite a lot about yourself, a whole lot about the university system, a whole lot about gender relations. Many of them would probably not have had, they'll have some idea about their sexuality, but they're more likely to explore it and become that sexual person in more sort of ways than one during their university time. So it is such a, as Jane has said, just being a student and enjoy it and explore it, because it's going to change and mean a lot for the rest of your life. This time here will mean a lot for the rest of your life, and how you face the body you are carrying in its different manifestations will therefore mean define the person, not determinately, but it's a very, very huge chunk of who you become. It has to do with how you survive, you know, living off campus, on campus, allowances, relationships, food, body image issues. Our girls are talking about body image issues. They're talking about their getting the grade. Libraries as what sort of space is the library for a young woman, a young lesbian woman? You know, what sort of space is the refectory? How do you just get food, eat, in the body that you occupy? What are the challenges? Are we just the same? Are we just student ID, or are we the different people that we are? And then how you bring it down to a little chapter is obviously it's obviously just to give a tip, but there's a whole lot more that is outside this volume that we went through, that we experienced, that we noted, and most importantly, the young women that we worked with at various moments have found it a very, very powerful research process to participate in feminist action research. And it's not without its challenges. Because of its, what we are experiencing is that, because unlike some other process that has, you know, goal and objectives, two, the end product shall be 1, 2, 3, 4. Because of the sort of self-defining nature of the end product, it's the monitoring and evaluation can be something that's not as easy to do as in some other more straitjacket process. So we'll see how we shape it into the future and get it to some sort of not straitjacket but useful ways of measuring, and not in measuring, but knowing that we are doing the right thing, that the girls are gaining something out of this tool. Thank you very much.
And the next author, the co-author, is Keith Sutter from University of Fitz.
Thanks, Jane. I suppose I should start by talking about my entry point into this project. When I got the call from the AGI to participate, I was at a phase of my life where I was feeling a really heavy amount of disenchantment. I'll tell you a little bit about that. I have been an academic now for about 11 years.
I read it.
I know. I lecture in the department of psychology at Wits. I have done so now for 11 years. And for the academics in this room, you would probably agree with me, but there's a moment in your career where you experience a feeling of disenchantment, and at so many levels. And when I got the call from the AGI, that's where I was in my life. Disenchantment is not just in terms of what I do as a psychologist, but also in terms of my kinds of engagement with students. And something happens to you during the course of the years. There is a moment in your career when you just stop listening to young people. And when I got the call, and it was all about working with this group of young women, and I thought, I don't know. And so we started the project, and initially we had thought we would just document issues around sexuality and gender on our campus, and actually realized how ridiculous that was without inserting ourselves into that process. And so what it boiled down to basically was trying to tell our own stories as young women and as older women, being on campus spaces. And the article that I have contributed with my colleague is called Thinking Women's Worlds. And basically it's a visual narrative. We wanted to tell the story about spaces, space and identities. How our identities are formed within those spaces, what are the kinds of identities we bring to those spaces. And I suppose for me, what I really take from this project is realizing in a very significant way how my experience of spaces, my mediation of spaces is so different from students who in some ways I identify with but don't identify as well. So we heard stories of gender and class and race, and there were stories I could identify with, and there were also stories that my students could not engage with. My experience of a space as a young black academic lesbian is radically different from the stories that young black lesbians were telling me, but because they were students. And so there were instances where I could relate, but there were instances where I actually experienced a lot greater sense of power because of my status as academic. So just trying to understand those different complexities was really something that I found useful from this project. And that was our first phase, and you see our paper basically speaks to that, our mediation of those spaces. And then we started a second phase with an exclusive group of LGBTI students. And I work with my colleague here, Nzi, most of you would know her, also from the department, and she introduced me to a program called Stepping Stones, which I found quite fascinating, but basically talking about sexual and reproductive health amongst LGBTI youth. And once again, I'm just overwhelmed with the kinds of different narratives that emerge because of the different positions we occupy on campus spaces. So for me, the AGI project has really been about starting to engage once again with issues that I had long ago forgotten, but also starting to listen. And actually listening to those experiences that I thought were had become irrelevant, and how they're actually quite meaningful for young people, young women. So yeah, that's my contribution to the project, and we carrying on a third phase now, feeling once again reinvigorated. I have moments where I call myself a feminist and moments where I don't call myself a feminist, but that's my own issues. but yeah, the AGI project has really allowed me to engage with all of these things that I thought belonged to a younger me. How I say younger, but yeah. and so yeah, we're happy to be part of this project once again and see what kinds of issues will be emerging once again for me. Yeah.
From the University of Zimbabwe. Naomi Wetwete is going to speak, and she also worked with her colleague Charity Mandereke.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As you have heard from Jane, I'm from the University of Zimbabwe, and my colleague Dr. Charity Mandereke, with a chapter in that, we have also a chapter in that book on the University of Zimbabwe. Initially, like what PC has been saying, when I was approached by AGI to do some research with students, I thought it was a good idea because my area is on sexual and reproductive health. So we came with my colleague Charity, and we had some discussions with the other lecturers here, not here at the campus, but somewhere within Cape Town. And when the issues that we came up with, when we got back and assembled the students, their own thinking. So we said, this is their space, we want them. This is about sexual reproductive health of female students in the University of Zimbabwe. So we gathered them with about three or four focus group discussions, and they were talking about issues they were facing as students at the University of Zimbabwe. And remember, we had a very difficult time during the 2008 was the worst when we had a depression, but things have started going up. So when we first met, it was in 2010, but with once you are coming from a depression, it takes long to recover. So the students were saying lots of things. They were talking about lack of accommodation, and that year in 2010, the accommodation was of residents had been closed, all of them, due to water shortages. They said, because of water shortages, we'll have another disaster. So students were staying in Harare, and it was difficult for those who were coming outside Harare. It was difficult for them. Even those in Harare, you want where you are closer to the place, and you can read more. So after having that, the students, we thought of a topic, which is lack of accommodation in the University of Zimbabwe, leading to the sexual and reproductive health problems. And from that, it was an eye-opening. Lots of issues came out. You as students, we thought maybe you are educated and you won't be have such problems maybe which have been faced by other youth, the other young women outside there. But we found that unplanned pregnancy was taking place at the university. Infection, HIV infections, dating older men, because you can't afford to look for accommodation or to afford the cost of living. So yeah, to date an older man, and all those things, even fine with gardeners, people making arrangements with gardeners so that they can use their bedrooms to sleep during the night and then come out. So all these issues came out as we were as they were discussing. And after that, this was supposed to be an action research, which I really liked about it. With these results, we went to the Vice Chancellor. We gave the report to the Vice Chancellor, and we also had this child event where we showed all the findings to the other way. We presented the findings, disseminated the findings to the students and lecturers in the form of drama, poems, and also the presentation. And it was really quite good. But we also gave the report to the Vice Chancellor. The Vice Chancellor is a man. Maybe he thought he couldn't tackle the problem, so he gave the report to the Pro Vice Chancellor, who is a lady. The Pro Vice Chancellor is Randa. I think some of you know her. She was very receptive, and she felt bad about the whole thing. And she said that was in April, May 2011, when we presented the report. She said, I want to make sure that in the next coming year, with the beginning of the year is September, August, September. So that was in May. She said, we'll make sure that by end of September, by end of August, accommodation will be solved, will be sorted out. And she did frantic efforts together with the Minister of Education to make sure that the water system was restored. And some of you, if you come to the University of Zimbabwe campus, you can see we have tanks. There are tanks there, bubbles, and then there are so many tanks, and then there are very big, round, big tanks, concrete tanks, which were also built. Very big ones to cater for the problem of water shortages. By September 2011, students were back at the campus. They were now back in accommodation. And the Pro Vice Chancellor said, I want to make sure that the female students are the first to get accommodation, and they did. Unfortunately, maybe people were still not used. I think they'd gone for 2-3 years without being at the university campus. They thought otherwise. The take up was not so high, but up to now, as I tell you now, the up subject is great. Everyone wants to go back into accommodation. So for us, it was a big thing. And the working together with the university, as students, I also encourage them, don't be aggressive to administration. Work together with them. If you have problems, take problems diplomatically to them. Everything will go well. You can find evidence in that report. But during the second phase, because the first phase is two years. In the first year, that is, this is the project that we did. The second year, we said, let's look at sexuality in terms of sexuality at the University of Zimbabwe among female students, and we looked at dating and dressing. And it was quite fantastic what came out. You find that we have two types of students at the university, female students, those coming from with a rural background and those from the urban. And usually the from the rural, we call them SRBs, which is strong rural background. they dress like me here. Everything decent. And the urban ones are minis, tights, catching everything.
Take what we call hostel wives, and they have to do all the sort of kind of social
reproductive work for the male students, like cook and clean and so on. So these were some of the issues that came out, and we were attracted to the methodology. New to us because of its sort of transformative, democratic, and participatory ideals. But that in itself was a bit fraught with sort of kind of contradictions. Because we came as two lecturers with, I suppose, differential access to the academic codes than students. So we were creating this community of equals in terms of the research, but the access to the academic discourses was, I think, quite differential, and we had to mediate that space. So that was one of the, you know, one issue that we, I think we managed somehow to overcome, because some of the times we had to act as scribes with the literature, some of us reading the literature, summarizing it, and discussing it with others. But in the process, we also found that we needed to build a vehicle through which we could take up some of the issues, because actual research is not just about, as some would say, understanding the world, but understanding it in order to change it. And so we needed to create that vehicle through which we could effect some change, mobilize and challenge and disrupt, in certain instances, some of the sort of taken for granted wisdoms. And we did that, and we had a couple of activities. We had sort of drama, but we also had toying and demonstrations and all kinds of things. And in that process, found it very empowering for everyone concerned, because people could actually demonstrate their own agency. And we're also happy to report that we were sort of kind of scoffed at in the university structure. We were told, my colleague over there was reprimanded for, what was it?
For putting the university's name, bad image. Putting the university's name in a very negative publicity to the public.
Yes, because we spoke to the press, and we had our demonstration and our toy and TV and everything. Everyone was there. But I must say that we've managed to shift the opinions. Now we embraced, we're sort of part of the university's PR. Because gender-based violence is such a big issue at the university. So we think we've moved a few things. We've built organization. We think part of our challenge is the movement building of new generations of young feminist activists. And right now, through our research, we've included males in our project, even though we're not supposed to. Because we thought that we couldn't deal with the issues of gender-based violence without male engagement and the discussion around the issues of masculinity. And that process we hope to continue in the third phase. So we have what we call a feminist forum. We have a masculinity forum. And recently we were at a demonstration, because the police in Rundu, which is a sort of rural town in the northern part of Namibia, arrested young women for wearing hot pants and miniskirts, because they were supposedly trying to protect them from rape and violence. And so obviously our action research team had to go to the demonstration, and not myself, but my colleague over there went with the shortest mini she could find. And she had on TV in her mini, because we were asserting certain constitutional rights, which we find that more and more these rights are being eroded. And if we don't defend that democratic space, it will be taken away completely. But also in the process, we've been approached by some lesbian students on campus, and we are creating another forum where we come together on certain collective issues, but also create spaces where people can discuss their issues separately. So that's where we are, and we're quite excited to continue.
So those are some of the voices that you can hear represented in the journal. You also get a hint of the fact that behind this little creature, there's many, many, many other voices. And I think the miniskirt issue deserves taking up all around us. Right at the moment, in fact, SWET, the Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force, is leading a march for sex workers and empowerment, dignity, and decriminalization in Cape Town. They too were warned that the sex workers should, I mean, it's happening, well, it started at 12:30, so it's might be over, it might not. And they too were warned by the police that they could not guarantee their safety if they wore miniskirts. And that this was put in, this was a verbal communication on the phone to the director of SWET, but it was put in writing to SWET when they're, because they're also planning a similar march in Limpopo next month, and the police said, we will not protect you if you wear miniskirts. So the meaning of the miniskirt, rather ironically, it's like, we have to fight for miniskirts. But there are issues which connect us all, and those of us who don't even possess a miniskirt, they actually thank you for being here. And we probably don't have a lot of time, but are there any burning questions from those of you who bothered to come and give your time and energy and listening? Yeah.
Are there any more of the journals around?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, awesome. Up at the top. Please feel free to come and get one. It's also online free, but it's pretty to hold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So happy International Women's Day.